Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. It's another episode of the Global Development Primer podcast, and today we're joined by Gretchen Villegas. She's a 25-year-plus veteran in global development, specializing in mission-driven innovative program designs through partnership development, impact scaling, and revenue growth. Now, Gretchen has professional experience working in collaboration in both nonprofit and for-profit partners in the implementation of local country programs that support vulnerable communities. And this includes Latin America, Africa, and Asia. Now, Gretchen has a wide-ranging expertise in executive leadership of global program portfolio effectiveness through evidence and data, international program design to optimize impacts for vulnerable children and their families, rigorous research to learn and adapt in program implementation, and revenue strategies to scale and enhance the reach of programmatic initiatives. She has secured funding and implemented projects for institutional donors, including the United States Agency for International Development and the United States Department of Agriculture, foundations including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and MasterCard Foundation. And she's worked closely with private sector partners such as General Mills, Cargill, Animal Nutrition, and Danone, just to name a few. Gretchen is fully bilingual in Spanish and a collaborative leader, skilled facilitator, and a team builder. She's a proven track record of bringing together consortiums of stakeholders for social impacts, including the private sector, to achieve common goals. And she's driven by data and analytics and believes that the evidence-based programming and the for-profit partnership is essential and effective in sustainable development for the long term. And she's here today to tell us about all the things that she does. Gretchen, welcome to GDP.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
It's great to have you here. And you've got quite the portfolio of experience in international development. And maybe you could just give us a snapshot of maybe what you've done or what you're planning to do next. And keeping in mind that we do have a lot of students studying global development who often ask what a career in development looks like. And I tell you, many professors will fumble and stumble over that answer because, you know, not everyone has had a career in global development. So, you know, what did it look like for you?
Well, that is a great question, because when I was within my undergraduate degree, I asked that same question of my advisor. And my advisor basically said, look, you like to travel abroad and you've taken on our abroad programs, because I was able to actually study within my 4-year degree in Mexico, in London, and in Spain. And so my counselor basically said, my advisor said, well, you know, why don't you take a look at the Peace Corps? Because it's something that you're really interested in. You seem to really like your political science and anthropology classes. Just take a look at it. And I did. And honestly, I haven't looked back since then. I think starting out in the Peace Corps, 2 years of volunteer work with the US government really gave me an opportunity, right? Living, working in an isolated village in Suriname, South America, no running water, no electricity, learning the language from the children. I think that was where I started to say, yeah, I think I can make a difference here. And I was blessed, really gifted, with some additional mentors out of the Peace Corps who helped me prepare for about 15 and a half years of living and working in Latin America and East and Southern Africa before I came back from abroad to the US. And when I lived and worked in Latin America and East and Southern Africa, I was working for the US government contractors. So there's foreign aid money through the US government, and there are various local for-profit and nonprofit organizations that write proposals to do development work. And I had an opportunity to actually go abroad and learn how to manage the projects with their compliance, how you do work planning, how you measure metrics, reporting to the U.S. government, because, of course, that is U.S. taxpayers' money. But I also had the opportunity to learn about private sector investments and how if the private sector had not invested in our projects, how really we couldn't reach a sustainable outcome. Because if you'd end up at 2 or 3 years at the end of your project, you had to leave, right? The money wasn't there. You maybe made your impact results with the government, but unless you could really integrate with the local communities as well as the private sector, that initial investment wouldn't continue.
So there's a lot of important takeaways here that you've kind of touched on. And, you know, I think even just at the most basic level, for students who are thinking about what is international development, should they study it? Should they pursue a degree in it? Right from the beginning, you mentioned, you know, are you curious about traveling? Are you curious about actually living abroad? And sometimes that's not for everybody, to be honest, right? There's something about that. And the volunteering that you did after that is something that occasionally universities will offer or internships will provide. The Peace Corps is a great example of that. In Canada, there's been a few examples of programs that have thrived and then kind of diminished over the years. And I know our friends in New Zealand have a few study abroad opportunities as well. That's something that's really important for development educators to be mindful of, that the volunteering isn't the entirety of what development is. That there's that third level, if we can call it that you mentioned, where you're getting into the analytics, you're getting into budgeting, you're getting into management skills at this point. And I wonder, as educators in development, sometimes we forget that last step.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I can tell you is that you can find opportunities out there if you look for them. There are large nonprofits. There are policy institutions that offer fellowships or internships, some with stipends, some even paid. If you're interested, do it. Even a missionary trip. I mean, whatever you can sign up for so you have the experience, because I would say half of the Peace Corps volunteers who left would never have come again. And half of us did not want to leave, right? So, you know, I think that's a big part of it. But second, I think that when I came out of Peace Corps, someone said to me, Gretchen, you may have had the experience now, but if you really want to develop your career, you need more hard skills. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the School for International Training in Brattleboro, Vermont. I have a master's in intercultural management, of which I call my alternative MBA. And the reason I call it that is because it's all about management, projects, adult learning, impact and analytics, how to write proposals, how to link your proposal and activities to a budget, how to manage people. So it's everything you learn in an MBA, except it adds onto it how to be culturally cognizant of what you're doing, how to manage a team that's very intercultural, where you're entering a community and you are the foreigner. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Right. You know, and we would walk into our lessons and they would say, look, here's your scenario. I want you to facilitate a meeting with this community. You don't speak their language, right? Or minimally. They're adults and you want to talk about, an education project. How do you go about it? And the key to that, and I would say the School for International Training is definitely worth looking at for anyone who who wants to go in depth in this way. There are people from all over the world, and you are not allowed to enter if you've just come out of your undergraduate degree. You must have an experience that you can actually use and share. And to this day, I use everything I learned during my time there.
There's a lot to unpack with that, but that's some really, really good advice that I've heard very few people sort of give over to students in this way. So I think those who are tuning in can be very appreciative of it. And for you, from these lessons learned and the skills that you've gained here in this way, what are some of the key experiences and lessons learned that stand out in your career?
When you enter a new country, you are the guest. You do not know more than everyone who lives in that country. You do not know more than the community you're trying to help. If you really want to help, you need to listen. And not just hear, but that whole active listening, and really ask so many questions that you can really understand what the community is struggling with. What are the root problems that they would want to tackle? Because if you bring in a program and tell them that you're bringing this to the community, do you want it or not? Of course, they're going to say, yes, I want it. But then as you continue and there is not community buy-in and the community does not have a voice, there will be less and less interest over time. And so if you want to do impactful development, if you want to really help, right, that community, you want to let it be locally led. And I think that is one of the big trends that we're really seeing highlighted right now, that the studies and evaluations coming out right now from all kinds of donors, whether they be large foundations like Ford Foundation or MasterCard, whether they be, you know, Canadian government, the United Nations or USAID, it's all saying that if community has buy-in, or if private sector has skin in the game, there's going to be a good outcome. Mm-hmm. But if you come and just offered, if you just offered vaccinations, right? Or you offered a health clinic, but you didn't get information about what they're really looking for, how you can maintain it, or what's important to the community, it will only be good for the time that you're there. And that is not, in my opinion, the goal of true global development.
Oh, no, not at all. And, you know, the example, just as you mentioned that, you know, the anecdote just pops straight to mind. You know, there's, you know, polio vaccine troubles continuously in certain villages in Pakistan, for example, because of that, because there is a real disconnection within the leadership of those communities and what sort of global efforts have been made to try to promote universal polio vaccine that's happening, you know, there right now. I mean, Zambia is in the midst of a very serious cholera outbreak, and I can only imagine how some of the international response versus some of the local direction is going to compete with each other. And just like you say, when you build a health clinic, I was in the Amazon in Ecuador and working there, and I remember the EU built a very fancy health clinic, fancy-ish. But again, they didn't really read the room with what was needed for this small town. And they wound up building it in a place that, you know, anyone could have told them, hey, there's low-lying water here. You need to not build it here. And sure enough, three of the clinic rooms got flooded. And flooding brings mosquitoes, the kind that bring malaria and dengue and this sort of business. And again, just sort of not really understanding and coming in with the big ideas. That's certainly a big challenge. But you know, is a term scaling up? Is that what this leads to, where you're scaling up ideas from the community and trying to inform the donors themselves about what direction that needs to be taken in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are great comments that you added, because I've seen the very same thing. So it's community-led development, and community-led development is really important because you come together and you partner. So the key is partnership, right? You create a partnership of how to move forward to solve a problem, right? So you have to identify the problem and then come together to agree on a solution and work together on the solution so that you have a consortium or a group working on it, which includes for-profit, local, potentially global as well, nonprofit and community leadership. You've got government, because much of this is policy within government, right? With the basic needs that people have, and the communities. And if you're able to orchestrate all of that, then you have built the foundation that then can and absolutely can scale. However, that then brings you to the right design. And so that is where impact analytics is taking a new space within the global development field. And it's something that is really important to me. So what you want to do once you have a design is build out the financial analytics and the impact of that scale that you were talking about. How much would it cost to do X over Y period of time? And then basically know, does that design offer the ability to scale or is it limiting? And I think right now we're seeing both. We're seeing both out in the field. Some they think will scale, but they're limited because they didn't do the work on data up front. And some they did the work on data, but couldn't find enough funding behind it. Because as I'm not sure if you've come across Raj Shah's, the president of Rockefeller Foundation, put out this Big Bets book recently. And it's really true. If you don't have enough revenue, you don't have enough funding behind some of these big challenges that need a solution, you are limited.
Hmm. Yeah. And the other factor that is sometimes forgotten is that the financial engine of global development is the private sector. It's majorly involved beyond just the centers of sort of policy design. If it's in Washington, the World Bank or whatnot, but really the private sector has an enormous role in terms of where the actual financial revenue comes from to lead these projects forward. And I feel that's another sort of gap that we don't include in our development teaching, that when students are, or those who are interested in getting into the field, come into it, that to really go beyond the missionary charity, there needs to be financial knowledge and there needs to be experience managing finances in a way that adheres to norms and stability within the private sector.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. And I can say that has really changed. When I was in Peace Corps and when I went to my master's degree, we didn't talk about that either. We totally separated for-profit from nonprofit. But today, you see more solicitations and requests for for-profit to lead these initiatives and partner with a nonprofit, because the nonprofit has that cultural technical expertise, right? Around humanitarianism, around dealing with the type of root causes and issues that communities are facing. But the for-profit is exactly as you say. They are supporting the wealth that actually gets created locally because we're working in their supply chains. Right? Mm-hmm. Because we're touching the bottom line of revenue that the for-profits either locally or globally have. And remember, a lot of those local for-profits are distributors of large international for-profits. So it's all linked at the end of the day. And so to really help that smallholder farmer and the vulnerable family, it all has to come together. And I would absolutely agree that any possibility of bringing in how for-profit can really fuel the nonprofit wealth that's created in the community and how that creates sustainability, would be a huge benefit for any student to spend time on, because that is the way forward. That the analytics and the evidence and data is showing that that is bringing the sustainability.
That's fantastic. And the other factor to remember is that there are other competing development models and development actors. Right now, many of China's initiatives are sometimes just state to state, and they come in promising big wealth, big infrastructure, big jobs, big this, but we will reclaim land if you sort of don't follow the rules.
And that's
again a bit of a clarion call for development practitioners in the West to sort of kick up into high gear and say, look, we do need to understand these impacts, scale up accordingly, work together, because there is another model out there that maybe some local governments will find more enticing just temporarily, but there could have long-term consequences for sustainability overall.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree more. I think trying to be an example and trying to guide and help governments along to see those gaps, right, in those models is what we need to do. And, you know, there's always motivation behind aid money, right? But, you know, 90% of that motivation really has to be for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And when it's not, local governments do tend to understand after a while, because things happen, like you say, they do take land back, or they, I saw in Malawi when I was living and working there, the Chinese actually had bought up so much of the land, they were displacing smallholder farmers to have nothing. So I was working with Land O'Lakes at the time, and we were trying to find communal land for dairy animals so they could have an income, because that was the result of the big, beautiful expressway that was put in Malawi.
There it is. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that model of development repeats so many mistakes from the 1980s that we would need another 3 hours to discuss it in detail. But exactly. A lot of people who are interested in getting into development sometimes don't know where to go to begin. Sure, there's jobs that might be called out for by government or by nonprofit, occasionally the private sector. But in terms of independent consulting, this is something that you've done as well as a development consultant. Where do people begin on that journey?
Yeah, that is a great question. So first of all, today, when they look at consultants, they look at specializations, right? So just like in the private sector, where you have a specialization in computer programming, right? Or you specialize in sales, they're looking for the same thing now in terms of global development, because it is becoming much more specialized than it was before and is much more competitive than it ever was before. So when I say specialize, the question would be, you know, what do you mean specialize? So there are large non-governmental organizations and contractors, right? So there are for-profits that also implement in this field. And they're looking for those who do agriculture value chains, right? Mm-hmm. They're looking for access to finance. Mm-hmm. They're looking for health, global health. Do you have a master's in public health? Have you done an internship with supporting clinics? They're looking for people who know a lot about education, right? And how to, maybe they're teachers who decided to continue the education into international teaching. So basically, you're looking at the different specialization. My specialization is market systems. So mm-hmm. I believe that the vulnerable need to be included in systems, and you have to break a system in the market in order to bring the vulnerable groups inside the system. And if the vulnerable group is left outside the system, they will never bring wealth. They will always be exploited. And so I studied systems, and I studied how do you bring individuals inside the system by identifying where are the gaps that need to be filled in that system, and how can a smallholder farmer or a vulnerable community member be a social entrepreneur? So entrepreneurship and small medium enterprise is a big specialty. So if you want to work in consulting, number one, figure out what you really want to study and like to do. Number two, look for an opportunity to learn from someone and grow yourself, meaning offer to volunteer, offer to go abroad and provide some training sessions, right? Eager to learn. Through that way, you will meet lots of people who will agree to mentor you and support you as you move forward. And right now, even getting an entry-level position in the global development field, kind of the associate coordinator degrees, you need to know someone. And they want to see that you have applied yourself, right? That you've done something, even whether it's a paid internship or a volunteer. You have to have that kind of experience. And you have to have some studies behind you. You can't just go in and say, I'll do anything. You have to say, look, I'm really good in finance and access to finance, and I study this. Look, I am, you know, I really like value chains and agriculture. I grew up on a farm. That counts. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different than it used to be, where you could just go in and kind of figure it out as you go, and not anymore.
No, I think that's great advice. And I think that it actually returns full circle to the starting point, which is, you know, go abroad and see if you like it, right? And if the last point is market your specialization, what you like, that you know you like and you know you can do, that's basically the same package. You're getting in touch with things that you personally enjoy and bringing it into a sector that needs people who are committed to be there because they enjoy it. So I think that our conversation today is truly enlightening for many students who are just getting into it. I know in the fall, I'll be teaching the introduction course to development studies here at Dalhousie University. And I guarantee that this conversation will be part of that in some way, shape or form. And Gretchen, I want to thank you so much for joining us on GDP. Having consultants and experts like yourself join us is incredibly valuable. And we hope that this helps in any way with your own endeavors that you're planning in the future.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk about the trends and the future. And I'm so glad you're there to be bringing up the future leaders, because we need many people with this focus. There's many people who need us out there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Gretchen. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. Likewise.